Our next writer has traveled all the way from Toronto today. This is her book, Standing Up for Janie. The drawings in this book are by Balint Jacko. I'll just read you a little bit about him. Balint Jacko was born in Budapest, Hungary in 1979. He received his BA in Fine Arts from Ryerson University. Working with photography, mixed media, painting, drawing, and sculpture, Jacko's works have been exhibited in Hungary, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Canada. Okay, now I'm going to introduce our writer, Sarah Selecki. Sarah Selecki has published short fiction in Geist, Boulevard, and the New Quarterly, and she placed first in the 2004 Prairie Fire Short Fiction Contest. She lives in Toronto. So please welcome Sarah Selecki.
Thank you very much for putting all of this together, Kate and Heather, and everyone else who you mentioned. I mean, by putting this together, I mean putting this together and putting this together. And I'm happy to be here from Toronto. I'm just going to read part of the story. Okay. Janie stands on a wooden platform in front of three angled mirrors, twisting so she can see how the dress looks from the back. There are 100 little covered buttons running up her spine. The silk straps are too long for her. They wilt off her shoulders. The attendant nips them with 2 pinched fingers. "We can fix those," she says. "Don't worry about the straps." Janie catches my eye in the center mirror. "You're supposed to cry when you see me try it on," she says. "That's how I know it's the right one." I turn my head sideways and blink a few times. "Stop faking it," Janie says. "Let's try it with the veil," the attendant says, then rustles off. When we're alone in the dressing room, I say, "You're joking, right?" Janie looks at her reflection. "Yes," she says, talking to the mirror, "I'm joking." She pokes 1 foot out from under the hem, holding her skirt, pointing her toes like a dancer. A long white thread hangs from the seam of the bodice. I want to tug at it, but I'm afraid it might make the whole dress unravel. "I like it," I tell her. "It's simple. Classic." Janie reaches into the front of the dress and lifts her left breast so it rests properly in the cup. Then she shimmies both breasts together, closer together, to make more cleavage. "All brides think they have simple gowns," she says. "Ask anyone who's been married. She'll say, 'My dress was very simple.'" I watch Janie's reflection. It's like I've been watching her in a mirror ever since the engagement. My response wavers like a needle on a polygraph. Dopey joy, strange feeling of dread. I've never trusted marriage, and I've always felt suspicious of weddings. But I'm the maid of honor. I'm feeling shots of anxiety in my chest that I can't explain. "This isn't a simple dress," Janie says to me in the mirror. "The buttons alone make it complicated." Janie and Milt were going to have a potluck at the YMCA community room. The plan was a simple wraparound skirt and whatever flowers were in season. Milt's band would play after they said their vows. But then Janie booked a priest at St. Anthony's and talked Milt into platinum wedding bands. Milt is a high school teacher trying to save up for a used Toyota, and Janie hasn't even found herself a job yet. "Something from Burke's," she told him. "We should have something in a little blue box. These are the rituals we have in North America." 3 weeks later, back at my place, Janie sits in the living room playing with her pack of cigarettes, trying not to smoke them. She has something to say. "I'm in the kitchen breaking garlic cloves apart, arranging them on the tray for the toaster oven. I'm charring red peppers in the big oven. I've placed a bowl of fat green olives on the table and a loaf of calabrese bread with my good knife stuck in it. Milt and his sister are coming over in about an hour. I'm making dinner for all of us tonight, except Milt's best man. David moved out of the apartment 6 weeks ago. My cat, Timotei, slinks around the corner and sticks her chin up at me. She smells the olives. When she was a kitten, I would find her on the pantry shelf licking the cap of the olive oil. David trained her with a blue plastic water pistol. She'd never jump on the shelf now, but she still loves olives. I pinch one from the dish, pop it in my mouth, and bend down to let her lick my outstretched finger. Her tongue is pink and serrated. The school just asked Milt to be the wrestling coach. Janie says he's excited. "Deep inside the heart of every man," she told me, "there is a boy who loves to wrestle." But I just can't picture it. I keep thinking of Milt yelling at a pile of boys squatting and wriggling over each other in the gymnasium. Then I think of Milt playing mandolin at the Tea House Cafe every Friday night. David would tell me that people contradict themselves, that this is what makes us human, and that I have to learn to tolerate it. I know that he's right. I should enjoy our contradictions. I slip the tray of garlic cloves into the little oven and turn the knob to max. There's a bottle of Merlot that I was going to save until everyone got here, but I open it. Bonnie, come in here and to keep me company, Janie calls out to me. Everything's done, I say, coming out with two glasses. She's stretched out on the couch, barefoot. When did they say they'd get here? We have lots of time, I say. I find myself a spot on the floor. Now, you tell me. She reaches for the wine. First, you have to promise. There's a collection of cat hair underneath the couch. I don't usually see the couch from this angle. I resist the urge to get up and vacuum before Milt and his sister get here. Becky makes me nervous, I say. Does she seem uptight to you? Becky was raised by her grandmother, she tells me. But she's fine. Who raised Milt? Janie curls her toes over the arm of the couch. His dad came back when he was a kid, she says. But his grandmother took care of him too, I guess. Still lying down, she twists her hair with one finger and holds her wine in the other hand. The glass teeters, and I'm afraid I'm going to spill it. You're lucky that Milt is so laid back, I say. David could be so uptight. Janie says, I saw David last night. He's still uptight. I watch Janie's wine glass. Where? I try to sound nonchalant. Do you really want to hear this? Janie says. Should I be telling you this? Was he with someone? He was with us. Timotei has coiled herself around the corner and into the living room. She finds me on the floor and dives headfirst into the carpet at my feet, then wriggles onto her back, asking for a rub. I'm fine, I say, though I feel a lick of fear in my belly. The truth is that I'm relieved not to be with David anymore. I didn't trust him when he lived with me. But the problem is now he's gone and I still don't trust him. I know it's none of my business who he's drinking with at Legends. I know I have to let go of this. Tell me the story, I say to Janie. Well, you know how Legends is so awful, Janie says. I mean, I won't even drink anything out of a glass there. Have you ever held a Legends glass up to the light? So poor David, he's trying to order a nice glass of wine. Who drinks wine at Legends? I keep telling him, just get a beer, just get a beer. She laughs and takes a sip of the Merlot. Now this is nice wine, she says. It's David's, I tell her. He forgot about a case of this in the closet when he left. It's quiet for a minute. The red peppers sizzle in the oven. I rub my hand over Timotei's belly, those little pink nubs buried in silver fur. What did you want me to promise, I ask. That you'll always be my best friend, she says. But I think I've missed my chance. She's not going to tell me now. I brought a kind of cancer into our conversation by saying the words, when he left. But the air around Janie still shimmers. She looks like she's just fallen in love. Are you whitening your teeth, I ask. Janie sits up on the couch, sets her wine glass down on the coffee table, and stares at me. Her skin smooth and holy like scrubbed stone. To make her laugh again, I say, you're not screwing around with anyone, are you? She puts her hand up to her mouth. I can't believe it, she says. Why would you ask me that? Janie is still wearing that silver bracelet with the hummingbird engraved in the band. It's a Haida design. I found it for her in Vancouver before we ever met these men. I gave it to her as a coming-off antidepressants gift. She went off the Paxil too quickly, though, and relapsed into an even worse depression soon after I gave it to her. I moved into her little West End apartment with the Murphy bed that I pushed back into the wall each morning. We smoked Nat Sherman's out on the fire escape and listened to Buddhist meditation tapes. When a thought appears in your mind, the monk told us, imagine it as a soap bubble and push it away with a feather. I used a small scalpel blade to shave off tiny piles of powder from the blue pills, measuring off minuscule amounts so she could come off gradually. It took over a month, but she hasn't been on them since, as far as I know, not counting the occasional Xanax before bed or Ativan for the plane. I was just joking, I say to her. I focus on her wrist when I say this. I wasn't seriously suggesting it. The bones in Janie's wrists are very fine. There are pale blue veins just under the surface. Janie has always looked lovely in blue. It occurs to me that this could be because of her thin skin. It's not obvious then, she asks. I look up at her. I told him that it had to stop, she says. She drops her hand to my ponytail and loosens the elastic. Let me play with your hair. When was the last time someone played with your hair? She sifts strands of my hair through her fingers and I feel my whole body relax despite myself. Wait, I say. You still want to get married, right? Yes, of course. This wasn't like that. It was just something I needed to do before the wedding. I love Milt, I say. Milt is good. Milt is good, she agrees. The wine glass feels cool in my hand. I'm surprised by Janie's affair, but not shocked. She's been so remote. I want to press her for details, but I'm cautious. We assume love is singular, Janie says. She's making a braid now. That it's exclusive. Why do we do that? Chemistry, I tell her. It's chemistry you're talking about. Maybe, she says. Maybe chemistry regulates love. Love is a decision, I say. If love is a decision and there's no magic meant to be, then it's just arbitrary, isn't it? We could be in love with anyone. I pull away from Janie's hands. I stand up and look at her. She's sitting cross-legged on the couch, the way we used to sit when we were meditating. Do you love this guy? I ask. She puts her hands to her face. Think so, she says. Bonnie, I feel a little out of control. And then I can see it there inside her, the squirm of serotonin, the flush in her cheeks. I cross my arms and nod my head, aware that it makes me look more judgmental than I actually feel. Well, this explains it then, I say. The white dress, the platinum wedding bands. I was always going to be an ironic bride, Janie says.